Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. So, do you want marketing made simple? Shopify removes the guesswork with built-in tools that help you create, execute, and analyze all your online marketing campaigns. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/income. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of Broadway Breakdown. Before we begin, a quick note about this episode. This is the first episode I've recorded since March where I had another person in the room with me while recording, and I do not have any of my usual recording equipment for this, so I may do with what I had. I'm not a sound engineer, so it turns out it wasn't the best. My mom and I tried to record again, and it was better. Her audio comes out super clear. Mine goes in and out of being warped, though. Who knows why? I have not ruled out sabotage. But if that's something that's really going to affect your enjoyment of the episode, I'm sorry. There's nothing I can do about it. Otherwise, if you don't think it'll be a problem, just, you know, have this warning and then enjoy the rest of the episode and enjoy better sound quality in the future. And in 2021. All right, enjoy, guys. Thanks. Bye. Okay, you ready?
Ready.
Hello, everyone out there in the Broadway, iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, Stratosphere, and beyond. Welcome to another episode of Broadway Breakdown. I am Matt Koplik. With me today is my idol, my dream, my mother, my mommy, Miss Dani Jackson Koplik. How are you, mommy?
I am great, Matt. Thank you for asking.
You're welcome. Full disclosure, guys, this episode has had technical problems with the wazoo. It would not be an episode of The Breakdown without something like this going down. So we'll see how this turns out. It's a few hours since we've recorded. We both have had a little bit of wine, and our brains are a little scrambled from watching the first episode of The Undoing. So we'll see how this goes. Hello, Mother.
Hello, sweetheart.
Sorry, that was a long tangent. Today, what are we discussing today? What's our main topic today?
We're discussing The Prom.
The Prom, the movie musical on Netflix and the stage musical that once was and always will be. Before we get there, though, I posted on Instagram that you were coming to this podcast and asked the people, asking you some questions about me to see what people were interested in and, you know, wanted to hear from the perspective of the woman who made me. Because when you think about it, you made me. I grew inside of you and now I'm sitting in front of you. Isn't that weird?
It is very weird.
That wine is kicking in. All right, so our first question is, what kind of child was Matt?
Very easy. He was stubborn. So stubborn.
Still true.
Yes, if something didn't go according to his plan in his head, there was, I mean, it was almost like an arm wrestle to get him into the car.
I don't even know what my plan was. I think I just
resist whenever possible.
Resist, exactly. That's the only word you have for me, stubborn?
you're talking about when you were as a child.
Yeah, a child.
Oh, you were very creative. Mm-hmm. You
ruby red slippers.
Yes,
you red
danced
socks,
a lot.
Danced a lot. Red slippers over the blue socks with my giant Jumanji t-shirt. Yeah.
And you became musical very young. Mm-hmm. We took you to Beauty and the Beast on Ice when you were about 2.5. And we didn't think you'd be able to make it through like any of it. And you sat there rapt for what? 2 hours or something.
I guess. You guys took me to see Les Mis when I was 5.
Yeah, possible.
Yeah.
Well, you let us know early that you had this interest.
Yeah. Well, and you guys were good at letting me have it, which I appreciate. I mean, you know, you give and you take. You let me rent the Red Shoes and Mikhail Baryshnikov and the Nutcracker every week. But in return, I had to play Little League. Well-rounded.
Let's talk the outfield.
Yeah, picking daisies. Oh, this is a new one since we recorded the first time. Also, if you're asking yourself, why are you guys being surprised by these questions? Didn't you record this before? I cannot stress enough how long ago in the day we first recorded this and how much wine I have had. So some of this is really brand new all over again. Okay, new question. Matt says he was shy as a kid. When did that end and why? I think that's fair.
It is. I think, well, you know, there's a difference between shy and bashful, which you were very, very young. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of grew into just kind of antisocial, maybe.
Right.
And
still true.
Yeah. And maybe at Emerson or high school, you developed more of a voice, but you still didn't like to stake your ground.
I think stage door helped a lot in terms of being a little more vocal, but I don't think I owned my opinions until probably right before I left for college.
Yeah,
stage door was very good about letting me come out of my shell and taking up some space, but it definitely was probably my last summer at stage door when I was like, I am a human being with opinions.
Yes, but I guess it was the first time you were totally in your element. It wasn't like neighborhood, you know, kiddie theater.
Yeah.
You were among people who are serious and you were in your element and you could speak the same language as all these people.
Some of whom were smarter than I was, and I learned a lot during that time at Stage Door. Does Matt have any weird living habits?
I was going to say, maybe I'm just going to push pass on this one. Because we've been living in such great harmony that I really hate to disrupt it. If anything, it's just like a little idiosyncrasy. It's not a big deal. Right. No.
My mother and I both are OCD about very specific things. And in our, what is now officially our third time living together, because, you know, there was youth. And then there was a 2-year period after I graduated college when I moved into this apartment with you. And then this is my third time, COVID times. And this time around, we have been more easygoing. We are vocal about the things that we need, but if it's something that's not important, we let it go.
Well, we're much more mutually respectful, and you're a man now, right? You're not a kid.
How dare you?
I know you don't like that, but you have matured in many ways, you know, and I've lightened up. So we meet in the middle somewhere.
Yes, I appreciate all of that. What's something about Matt that might surprise people?
Mm-hmm. Here we go. Everybody know Matt. I think everybody knows Matt as being really frank and honest and candid and, well, let's say blunt.
Emily Blunt, yes.
He lied like an MF when he was a kid. He lied and lied and lied, and it was futile. It was just futile.
I mean, I was just preparing to become president of the United States one day.
Yeah. I finally said to you one time when you maybe were in middle school or going into high school, I said, Matt, you have to tell me the truth because sometime you're going to be in trouble and I need to know that you're telling me the truth.
Mm-hmm. I do remember that. I don't remember where or when, but I remember those words.
Did it have any kind of impact?
In fact, I probably say I'm too honest now. I have many a theater friend who would come up to you and say, you've created a monster. Mm. Because they'll say, did you like the show? And I will say, I am so proud of you.
I'm very respectful of your voice, though. I think, you know, I wish that I could have the same certainty that you do sometimes. And you are very clear. I think you're getting better about couching it in nicer ways. Yeah. But you're very clear about what you feel and what you want to say, and you can defend yourself pretty well.
Anything else that might surprise people about me? You said nicer things in the first recording. I'm not liking the second recording.
No. I mean, what's surprising, people probably know you really well at this point. Matthew is very kind and is a very caring person. He's been great with me. I've been sick for a little while and am very well managed now, but he has been terrific and selfless and generous. And he is very generous. That's a wonderful trait. He is very generous.
Thank you. Okay, so this was actually asked by a couple of people, and Lord knows if you actually know the answer to it, but what was Matt's first word?
That's really a tough one, because he didn't speak till he was about three, so...
The age varies in family lore. I was three, I was nine. That's actually something that might surprise people, that I didn't speak for so long.
Yeah, we were all concerned for a while, but, you know, we had you checked out, everything was fine. But then when you did speak, it was so interesting because you would invert parts of the sentence, like the syntax would be weird, and sometimes you get idioms wrong, and so that was what I would correct.
Give me an explanation.
Oh, I don't know.
How dare you not remember something from 28 years ago?
Thanks. I can barely remember. Yeah.
We don't remember this afternoon's podcast.
No. I do remember when you were born, so that's good.
You remember the pain. Yeah. First of all, I also want to say, you know, what privilege for a parent to think just because they left the room, their child never spoke. So when parents say my kid's first word, I'm like, oh, is that what you think?
Oh, I know what your first word probably was.
What?
Ouch, from Laura beating up on you all the time.
My sister Laura. No, that implies that she acknowledged my presence.
Oh, that's true.
She just did not. I was invisible to that girl for like 6 years. To be fair, I didn't bring much to the table in those years.
Well, you were a good eater back then, so maybe you said like more food or something.
More.
Drumstick.
That was my word for Little Mermaid when I wanted to watch Little Mermaid. Nah. Which in retrospect does not sound great. It sounds like I'm full Patty Duke.
Hey, you know, you shot yourself in the foot because you wanted to watch that stuff and yet you put a toothbrush in the VCR.
Okay, we're laying it all out now. What's that story, Madre?
I don't know, but you was this in the same house.
This was my first childhood house. This was in Franklin Lakes, yes. And I was taught how to work the VCR. Because, you know, you teach your children the ABCs and you teach them how to work the VCR, those things. And my assumption is in my creative little three-year-old brain, I thought, oh, this thing, just you put something in here, it shows something on the screen. I don't think I made the connection of videotapes.
Uh-huh.
I'm just going off of 27 years ago. I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of three-year-old
it's
Matt.
It's possible.
And I, as you said, I was a very creative child.
You were very.
Yes. Still am to an extent. I swear I did not come up with this question. Someone actually asked this one. What's the thing about Matt you're most proud of?
Well, I sort of covered it a little bit before, but...
Say it again. Okay.
Well, I mean, obviously I'm very proud of his talent and I think that he has... There's so much untapped in him. It's all swimming. As my sister once said, there's a party going on up there. Mm-hmm. So many thoughts, so much creativity. Very, very proud of that. But as a human being, I'm very proud of him. He, as I said, is compassionate and cares about his friends and goes the extra mile. Living with me now, he hasn't complained. He doesn't complain. It's always sure. He's great. I think he's a great citizen of the world. He is a caring person, wants to take care of people less fortunate than himself. And I think that's how I would say it. I am very proud of you as a citizen of the world. You going to cry?
No, okay. I'm not going to cry. I'll say, thanks, babe. I like you too.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Would you also say it would surprise people just how an amazing singer I am?
I said you're very talented, and I love your dancing too, so yes. There you have it.
Yes, I danced a lot as a little kid. You could not tell me when I was 6 years old that I was not Moira Shearer in the Red Shoes. I would dance that 15-minute ballet all the damn time. I really had and still kind of have an affinity for redheads, now that I think about it. Huh. Ariel in The Little Mermaid, Moira Shearer in the Red Shoes.
There you go.
I love me some Emma Stone. I mean, Judy Garland in Wizard of Oz, kinda.
Messing.
Deborah Messing, yes, we love Deborah Messing. I just I like a good redhead.
There
it's
you
fun.
Go.
It's fun. Ha! There you go. So that's where we're at today, everybody. If you want to be that woman that turns me, chances are you're going to be a redhead.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar. You're the top. You're a Coolidge doll.
Which leads us to our main topic, the prom. So full disclosure, my mother and I, since Thanksgiving, have been watching a holiday movie every night during dinner, with the exception of one night where we watched Evita for research purposes for a YouTube channel that I'll be starting in 2021, where I will be doing video essays on theater and the like. So plays, musicals, movie musicals, adapted such and such. So the first one's going to be about Evita and the movie and why Madonna's bad, but it's not her fault. That's to say, we've watched a whole bunch. We have watched now 4 musicals, including The Prom, Evita, and Christmas on the Square, and Jingle Jangle.
Yes.
Yes. So before we get into absolutely everything, what is The Prom about? Mother, take the floor.
The Prom is about, first, there are two tracks that they mm-hmm. intersect. The first is some recently unsuccessful Broadway actors mm-hmm. Who are a little bit down on their luck. Their show just closed on opening night, and they are looking for a cause to try to build up some publicity for themselves. Mm-hmm. Okay, so put a pin in that. The other part is there's a story about a young high school girl who is a lesbian who only wants to bring her girlfriend to the prom. And I wish I could say hilarity ensues, but it's a very difficult process because mm-hmm. It's in the Midwest and the town folk are not all that pleased about that prospect at the prom.
Sure, which is how the Broadway actors come to her town. She becomes their cause.
The cause celeb, yes.
I just thought, what a great burn for a review. If you didn't like the movie or something, to say, and I wish I could say hilarity ensues. Yes, so it is definitely two wildly different styles that merge in this movie, and did so on stage as well. You have sort of offbeat, campy humor with the Broadway actors who are very into themselves and are very much a fish out of water. And then you have a much more earnest, introspective story with Emma, the teenage girl, and her girlfriend Alyssa, and everything that ensues with the PTA and the student body. And it is a musical. Lots of production numbers, lots of big movie stars. We got ourselves Meryl Streep, James Corden, Nicole Kidman, Andrew Rannells, Kerry Washington, Keegan-Michael Key. In his second musical this year, we saw him in Jingle Jangle. And yeah, and then some lovely cameos from Mary Kay Place, Tracy Ullman. We're going to put a pin in Tracy Ullman, right?
Yeah, we are.
Yes, we'll come back to her. So a little bit of background history on The Prom. The stage musical of which it is adapted from was written by Chadwick.
The stage musical from which it was adapted. You didn't say it that way.
I don't care what I said. Everyone knows what I'm talking about. I don't need to talk good English. My emotions run through. That's the beauty of musicals.
I know. I was just giving a real-time demonstration of what you said before.
Thank you ever so.
No problem.
You should go on Reddit because you are the internet police. Anywho. Book by Chadwick Wellen and Bob Martin. Bob Martin is probably best known for writing the book for The Drowsy Chaperone and starring as the man in chair. From an idea from Jack Vertel, I think is how you say his name, former artistic director of Encores. Apparently the whole lesbian wanting to take her girlfriend to the prom and getting shut down thing was real. And I guess it was Jack Vertel's idea to be like, what if some Broadway celebrities came in and tried to save the day? Score was by Chadwick Wellen and Matthew Sklar, directed and choreographed by Casey Nicola. Casey Nicola went on to do the choreography for the movie, which was directed by Ryan Murphy. We will come to him later. This was for Netflix. So basically, Ryan Murphy has this $300 million development deal with Netflix, and it's what brought us Hollywood this year. And Ryan Murphy went to go see the stage version of The Prom, fell in love with it, got it greenlit within a week by getting Meryl Streep and James Corden on board and Nicole Kidman. And this had a very quick turnaround. Usually in the good old days, stage musicals, if they were successful, would get turned into a movie within 5 to 10 years of their opening, and then by like the 80s and 90s it was more like 15 to 20. This was like a 2-year development, which is very fast, so good on them. The movie, as I said, has all those wonderful stage actors. The stage show had Beth Level, Brooke Sashmanskas, Angie Schwarr, Chris Sieber, Courtney Collins, Caitlin Kinnunen, Isabel McKellar. Remember those names? I'll be bringing them up later. So yeah, Mom, you knew nothing about this before we watched it, yes?
Right.
You had never seen it on the stage?
Nope.
I saw it on the stage. I saw it with my, at the time, 95-year-old grandmother. What are your immediate thoughts? What did you think?
I thought it was a lot of fun. I thought it was much higher quality than it might have been.
Mm-hmm. Netflix has money, that's for sure.
Yeah, and you know there was a lot that was humorous and sort of stereotypical, but by the end it was a really sort of feel good kind of a conclusion. It was a nice holiday thing to watch during the holidays, you know.
Yeah, and especially during this time when during we're this not year, really yeah. getting. Theater at all, and it's been a tough year, and
right.
this is sort of a nice way to close it all out. Yeah, what were some things that stood out most for you? We'll get to my opinions in a minute, because oh, you know I have them, kids. But what were some things that stood out for you? Good things that stood out for you, and then maybe some things that you might have taken a note on.
Well, there's sort of different tiers about this. You know, tier one is Meryl Streep, who mm-hmm. just blew the roof off. She was just amazing.
Ding dong.
Right? Fantastic. Big set of pipes. Very game. It was, you know, a kind of quirky character. Mm-hmm. She looked great. And, you know, I thought she was great.
She was a redhead in this one.
She was redhead. Yeah. And the rest of the cast was great too. I mean, I did like James Corden. I know there's some controversy about
that. We'll get to that. Yeah.
Yeah, I know, but I did. And part of the affect that happens is because of the sort of set design and the lighting, which were just really interesting and kind of kept you in the here and now, right? It was, mm-hmm. it was a very kind of modern feel and a little playful yes. also.
For me, color palette and the lighting was both a good and a bad, and I'll yeah. get to that in a minute. Anything that maybe stuck out to you not so bueno?
Yeah.
Go for it.
Well, there are two things. One, I think the ending, while delightful and happy-making, felt a little bit like a stretch. Mm-hmm. And I won't give it away if you don't want to. You can do it if you want to.
Yeah, I'll give it away when we get to my notes, because that goes into my thing.
Oh, okay.
And I know, guys, we're talking about this, like, we haven't already discussed it, but I guarantee you my mom has forgotten half the things I said last time.
Absolutely.
Mostly because I kept talking. So hopefully I'll be a little more concise.
Oh, this is fresher. This is good.
Yeah.
Very good. The other was dress rehearsal.
Yes. Well, so that's a line from the prom that I guess is a big fat lie. Life's no dress rehearsal. One yeah, right? thing's universal. Life's no dress rehearsal. Bitch, sometimes there is one.
Okay, James Corden plays...
I thought you were going to talk about...
Which? Yes, well, that's where it was going.
Oh, that's where it was going?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. So there, I took my hand and I waved it around my head, hoping my mom would understand what I was talking about. She knew exactly what I was talking
about.
Great, so go. I thought you were going to talk about the James Corden casting. No, you're talking about...
No.
Sorry.
Okay,
sorry.
So... James Corden has been sort of estranged from his mother, and someone makes a bold
move. Why is he estranged from her?
Oh, because when he came out as gay, she couldn't handle it, and the mm-hmm. father couldn't handle it. And whereas they didn't exactly kick him out of the house, he left before they could. And there had been years of no contact at all.
Yes. Darian Lake described, with her experience on season 6 of Drag Race, it was more of an invitation to leave.
Yeah, I guess that's right. So there is this magical, they find her, and the Broadway actors bring Mom
mm-hmm.
to the setting. And I'm an idiot because I didn't realize it was Tracy Ullman, but it makes
complete sense because I thought she looked ridiculous. Everybody else looked great. She looked ridiculous. And what I said to Matt after we saw it was that she looked like Dana Carvey's church lady. And then when I found out it was Tracy Ullman, well, of course, it looks like Tracy Ullman in a getup.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't look like an old lady.
Yes. And then you said something to me tonight after we finished The Undoing that I want you to say here.
What?
About Estelle.
Oh, yeah.
It was a question you had.
Yeah, no, I said, well, how come they could make Estelle Getty look aged appropriately in the cartoon world that,
that is the sitcom world,
right? They could make her look reasonable, but Tracy Ullman looked like a gag. I mean, to me, she looked like a gag. She looked like church lady.
Oh, you meant a gag like a spoof. I was thinking more like, oh my God, I'm gagging. No, you're right. The scenes that she had with James Corden, I thought Tracy Ullman did a very lovely job, but it was distracting because her makeup and hair was just so, it took me very much out of it.
It did.
And Tracy Ullman has always been known for her sort of shape-shifting abilities. So it wasn't anything she did. It was really just how she was made up. It looked very much like a sketch.
Yeah, it did. That's why I said it looked like SNL, but you know, it sort of didn't belong there. You get this emotional pitch and then you get distracted. It's very weird.
Yeah. And so why do you think I waved my hand around my head? What was that indicating?
Wig.
Yep, her wig. That's a wig, bitch. That's a man, Maury. So those were your two big bad takeaways. And then you gave us some good. You said Meryl. Anything else that really stood out for you about the cast? Any songs particularly liked?
I really enjoyed the whole thing. I am not as familiar with it, so my retention isn't that great, but it all sounded good. Nothing sounded dinky about the score or anything like that.
Let's give the people some context. What are some of your favorite musicals so they know where you're coming from when you say all this?
Well, as Matthew already said, I have no memory, so I will just go with the ones that I found iconic. I'm partial to Fiddler on the Roof because it was sort of a in the family in a way. And so that was maybe the first big thing that I saw.
Well, we can say your father represented and was very close with Jerry Bock, composer of Fiddler on the Roof.
From their teenage years.
For many, many years. Papa San was the executor of Jerry's estate for a long time.
Yeah. And he was his attorney. He represented him in all matters, business and personal. So that was, and I think we went to the opening. So that was like a big deal.
Yes.
That was a big deal. When I saw Les Mis, I it just captivated me. I think I saw it four or five times, maybe six. I'm not sure.
You took my gay ass in 1995.
Yeah, I did. I thought it was amazing, and it was before they sped it up. I think I stopped liking it when they sped it up and cut it.
They made some trims. I think some of the increased tempos are okay, but it definitely got to a point. It's at a point now where it's like on cocaine. But because I mean, if you listen to some of the tempos from London with when like Patti LuPone did it at the Barbican, it's like she like lovely ladies is like a funeral dirge.
Yeah,
it's like
no.
Ba, 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 da, da. It's like gee, speed this shit up. Yeah. We have a train to catch.
Right. But I did think that was like something that I'd never seen before.
Right.
The way it was staged and the music was amazing and everything. I just loved it. And then the next big iconic thing for me was Hamilton because not only was I moved by the story and by the music and by the casting and all of that, I was just really moved by the fact that it represented a paradigm shift for me to see a musical like that. And Matthew knows me as a crier. I mean, you know, Evita notwithstanding, I'm a crier.
You've cried at absolutely every single one of the holiday films
every
you've watched.
Every stupid holiday movie.
Princess Switch again, Christmas Prince 1 through 3, like goddamn clockwork. It is beautiful to behold. Let's get into my opinions now. It's going to be a hot 35 minutes.
Please tell us what you think. Compose yourself.
Wow, guys, my mom is vicious. And you wonder where I get it from. And just so you know, my dad equally is vicious. So my thoughts on the prom. as I said, I saw it on stage. I really liked it on stage. I thought it was very clever. There were things that didn't always work for me. You know, there's a song in Act Two called Love Thy Neighbor that when I saw it in the theater, I thought, you know, cute song, doesn't really get me, because the whole point is how one of the four Broadway actors, Trent, played by Andrew Reynolds in the movie, Chris Sieber in the show, talks to the, at that point, close-minded kids of the school who, for the entire time, had been bullying Emma in a very calculated, if rather toothless way, if I do say so myself. The bullies in the prom, both stage and movie, the things they do are very smart and take a lot of planning, but they're not really vicious a lot of the times. Like when Emma opens her locker in the movie and there are two teddy bears scissoring and that's supposed to be like bullying.
You know, they were more ignorant than mean.
Yeah, no, so close-minded.
Yeah.
I'll get to that in a second. But yeah, so the close-minded kids, the straighties, Trent sings Love Thy Neighbor, and it's all about the hypocrisy that people have when they pick and choose with the Bible, which, like, we know, we are all aware, and the people that we say that about and say it to are aware that that's what we think, and it has yet to really change anyone's mind. And it's just one of those songs where, like, the idea behind it has been said before, so to have it change all of these kids so suddenly always has rubbed me the wrong way. It rubbed me even more the wrong way in the movie for reasons I'll get to in a second.
Although it was kind of timely.
Sure. Love Thy Neighbor. You know, we need to hear that more than ever.
And the hypocrisy,
and
too.
Hypocrisy is the name of the game in 2020.
Right.
Trust and believe. That said, there's a lot about the movie that I really did enjoy. First of all, I think the casting overall is really exceptional. My biggest issue with the movie comes down to Ryan Murphy as a director and as a creator. The good news is that he did not write The Prom, and that is the best thing I can say about him. You know, The Prom, the movie has fortified for me that it is a very good stage musical. I thought so at the time. It was a divisive musical. There are people who found it to be amateur and campy. I thought it was really inventive and delightful. I feel like the movie has certified that for me. There are some changes. I am not one of those queens who's like, they cut a verse, they changed a word. I don't care about that shit. It's all about adapting something for the screen and also understanding what made the original source material work to begin with. For example, Oliver, I cite it all the time. I think it's the best movie adaptation of a stage musical ever. That show has six songs cut out of it for its movie adaptation. They move stuff around, but the dramatization of Oompa-Pa is a masterclass in adaptation. Look it up. It's fantastic. That said, with The Prom, it is relatively faithful. There were two major changes that happened, and they're both towards the end. And we talked about it. I'll talk about it again. One, so Barry Glickman, played by James Corden, is an out gay actor. More on that later. One of the themes of the movie and the show is how these four narcissistic actors think they're doing such good things and end up doing a lot more damage than good for the first 70% of the story. And everyone has their own damage that leads them to this moment. You find out Meryl Streep has her damage. James Corden's damage is that he also was a gay teen whose parents did not accept him, and he left and has sort of turned his back on them forever. In the stage show, it remains as such. He doesn't have any closure with his family. His mom is not a character in the stage show. And what I liked about that was not everyone's going to get closure with their parents. And to be fair, Emma doesn't have any closure with her parents in the stage show or the movie, so I appreciated that they kept that. But it was a nice thing to think about because it tells kids, you know, you're not going to always get the response you want from the people you love when it comes to this moment in your life, and you need to be ready for that. And you have to be ready to let them come to it on their own, but you also have to be ready for them to just not be there at all. It's heartbreaking, but it's a reality. So I liked that because you saw in the show Barry still kind of letting go of that damage and moving on from it. I thought that was really moving. And then the other thing is, in the stage show, so Emma's girlfriend, Alyssa, played by Ariana DeBose in the film, her mother, played by Kerry Washington in the film, is the head of the PTA, the people who originally shut down the prom, and then when they are forced by, was it the state attorney, something like that, to put it back up, and then they come up with that whole coup of having a separate prom and leaving Emma in her own little prom. In the movie, Ryan Murphy has directed Kerry Washington to be a stone-cold villain. No emotion, calculated the entire time. And when her daughter Alyssa finally comes out to her at the end of the movie, there's a scene right before the final prom happens. And it's a masterclass in how you can interpret a scene in two different ways and what one does. So, as I said, in the movie, Kerry Washington, stone cold villain. So when Alyssa, her daughter, tells her, "I'm gay," and her mom says, "I don't want you to have a hard life." Alyssa says, "It's already hard." She says, "We'll talk about it tonight." Kerry Washington says it in a very shutdown-y kind of way, like, "I can't deal with this, we're going to talk about it tonight," and walks out. And you think, oh God, gone for good. 4 hours later, she comes back looking like the inspiration for, you know, the best drag performance you've ever seen and saying, "I love you, you're my daughter, let's dance." In the stage show, that shit doesn't happen. She does not come back. However, the way that Courtney Collins, the actress who originated the role on Broadway, I want to say this again because I said it like a year ago, shout out Courtney Collins, who gave such a wonderful performance in that role, when she said, "We'll talk about it tonight," it was much more of a promising line delivery, because up until that point, Courtney Collins did not play Mrs. Green as a villain. She played her as a woman. She played her as someone who truly believed what she was doing was the right thing and was dumbfounded with the hate she was getting from the outside world and thought it was some kind of conspiracy, just did not get it. And you saw this kind of messiness about her. This, because at the end of the day, Mrs. Green is just a woman. You know, she's not a CEO or like someone in politics. She's a mother who's working on a PTA, and all of a sudden the country's looking at her and she doesn't understand it. So when her daughter tells her, "I'm gay," you see her have this sort of inner conflict. You can see she loves her daughter and she doesn't know what to do. And when she says, "We'll talk about it tonight," it's a step. And I liked that in a stage show because it wasn't a neat little bow. It showed us all different kinds of acceptance. You had characters who came and did a full 180, characters who were halfway there, characters who weren't there yet, but you could see they were going to. And I loved that because it showed the messiness in the gray area of life. The movie kind of obliterated that and just made it, everyone's done a 180, everyone's dancing. And part of me thinks that's Ryan Murphy being like, "We changed the world." And part of me is Ryan Murphy going, "Kerry Washington's got to be in the finale. So let's find a way to get her in that finale." Tracy Ullman too.
She also had a little bit of like a ringleader feel to her, you know, it was like malintent or something.
Yeah. I remember when she told, so when the whole like prom switcheroo, so there's a big twist, spoiler alert, where the PTA is forced to put up a prom. They have to give an all-inclusive prom. So as a loophole, they make one in the school gym. And then they make a second one that's secret and they don't tell Emma or the Broadway actors about it. And they have it at the Elks Lodge and that's where all the other kids are, including Alyssa. And so Emma's alone in the gym, stranded. And in the movie, when Kerry Washington tells her daughter, you know, "Oh, we did this thing," it's much more of a, "Look at this amazing thing we did," like pats her hair. She's so proud. In the stage show, Courtney Collins said in a much more, not conflicted, but again, earnest way of like, "Well, we did what we were asked to do. And, you know, I don't really agree with it, but, you know, we did it. So please leave us alone. We did it. Can we just move on now?" And it kept you from hating her completely because while what she said and did in the show was still bad, you saw the human being there and you almost wanted to be like, "If you gave me like an hour alone with her, I could maybe talk to her." Whereas in the movie, you're like, "I don't think I could talk to this bitch."
You know what she was? She was like a stick figure in a way.
Yeah, it was very two-dimensional, which honestly is Ryan Murphy's MO. Again, bringing it back to my biggest critique with the movie was Ryan Murphy as a director. I also didn't like the way he shot a lot of stuff. It was very busy camera work. And I get it, we live in, you know, a post-MTV world where it's quick cuts and whatnot. But it also kind of made some of the more heartfelt stuff less moving to me. Because yes, the show and the movie do have big style conflicts. They kind of combat all the time, where you have, you know, Dee Dee Allen saying how, "Unless I'm playing the miracle worker, I will not play blind, deaf, and dumb." And then you have Emma on her guitar singing into the internet about how her parents don't accept her and how she just wants to be her. And it's beautiful, but Ryan Murphy has the bed twirling around and has all these bright lights and multiple camera angles. And I'm like, just put the goddamn camera on Jo Ellen Pellman. She's good enough. Just let her do it, you know? And again, you mentioned the color palette and the lighting. It was something that I liked and something that also bothered me. Much like, you know, when you're in a relationship with someone. I like this about you, but it also bothers the shit out of me. I'm joking. I've never been in a relationship.
But he's available.
Yep, everyone's knocking down my door. So the first 40 minutes of the movie, I guess, like there's a lot of major lighting things going on during musical numbers. Lots of big, bold greens and pinks and purples. And they do one in the middle of the song, I Just Want to Dance With You, which takes place outdoors in the middle of the night. So for it to go from nighttime to bright blue and purple was very jarring, took me out of it. And I understand it's a musical. It's a movie, but it's also a musical. So you have this imbalance of it's a movie and it's a very unforgiving medium. So there needs to be some sort of realism, but it's also a musical. So we need to have heightened stakes and heightened emotions. So you stylize it a bit, totally down. Totally. However, sometimes the little things add up so that way the ultimate effect is undermined a bit. So that was that for me.
Part of it was almost like a little bit of an inside joke or a treasure hunt. I'm not sure which. It's like once you start seeing that yellow, you start looking for it in every scene and there it is. There were certain markers that went throughout that were just kind of weird signatures or something. Yeah. I don't know what they were.
Yes. Okay. So also full disclosure. Anyone who's listened to this podcast before knows I do not care for Ryan Murphy. I don't care for most of the projects he does. I am thrilled with the opportunities he provides for actors. He has given a platform for actors who maybe didn't have those platforms before. Trans actors, BIPOC actors and actresses and actresses of a certain age who maybe haven't found any more roles since, you know, hitting 50 because that's how Hollywood do. I appreciate all that. I wish the material he gave them was usually better. Again, granted, he did not write The Prom, but still that's his aesthetic. It's this sort of shallow veneer where the idea is there. It's a great idea. And then the execution fucking sucks. I gave Hollywood all of my time. You can attest to this. We watched it. Mm-hmm. I wasn't liking it and I kept through it. I thought maybe till the end. I was so angry at the end of it. I hated it so much. Because they had the audacity to say, the system in Hollywood's not broken. We just need one white person in power to, you know, give opportunities to, you know, other people, and it'll all be fine. Make more movies about black protagonists and America will be less racist. And it's like, that is a very simplified answer for a very complicated issue. But as my dear friend Andrew Melendez, been on the pod, you know him very well.
I do.
Yes. He said, and I loved it and I stole it, Ryan Murphy has benefited from the system working as it has. So he's not going to come out and say that the system is broken in his work. He's going to project the narrative that's worked for him, which is that he is a white male in power who has provided many opportunities for people. So he's going to continue writing those stories, which is fine to an extent, but don't necessarily say that's the ultimate answer. It's a step. That's all it is. It's a step. But he would have you believe it's the answer.
Listen, you bigoted monsters, just who do you think you are? Your prejudice and your repression won't get past this Broadway star. Stealing the rights of a girl who is an LGBTQ teen. I've been far too angry to Google what those letters mean.
So let's get to an issue that has taken the internet by storm, which is that Mr. James Corden, Tony-winning actor, late-night talk show host, former cat, plays Barry Glickman. Barry Glickman is a gay character. James Corden is straight. Before we get into the drama, how did you come to find his performance in the movie? And you can be honest, because you know how I felt, so.
I thought it was good, and I thought it felt
genuine, because honestly, I have a hard time thinking of James Corden as straight. I'm sorry.
Nothing wrong with that. Do you know what? Did Nanny say anything about his performance, or did she just say she liked the movie?
She liked the movie. I think, you know, Meryl, of course, is there's Meryl and then there's everybody else.
Well, it took Nanny a long time to come to like Meryl Streep. Yeah. That's a famous story in our family. My mother's mother famously did not care for Meryl Streep in her heyday of Sophie's Choice and French Lieutenant's Woman and whatnot. Although, to be fair, Meryl also doesn't think she was very good in the French Lieutenant's Woman. So, point one for Nanny.
It wasn't a good movie. So there
you go. It wasn't a good movie. It's a boring movie. She's fine, but it's a period film that no one understands. Anywho. No, I rather enjoyed James Corden as well. I thought the first 5 minutes were a little rough. Because I was getting used to his performance. And also, to be fair, I thought that as the movie continued, he sort of eased into it a bit more. As the road got bumpier for his character, his performance grew. There was a lot of love and a lot of energy and a lot of charisma. And with some of the more dramatic scenes, I thought he did a really lovely job. He sang well.
Well, they were all a little over the top in the very beginning.
Yeah. Yes, he was over the top. So was Meryl.
Diva over the top.
Yes, both of them were.
Yeah.
So have you read anything about like sort of the drama with him in the movie and sort of other?
No, but I know the broad strokes of the argument.
Yes, which is?
Well, which is that with all the, why would you have a cisgender male play?
Heterosexual male.
Heterosexual male, sorry. Play a gay person when there are so many gay actors who are always looking for parts, and why would you have to, mm-hmm. you know, do that?
Yes. I also, listen, I know I'm a hater, guys. Just bear with me. The ire coming towards James Corden, I think, is not really warranted. It should go to Ryan Murphy, because if you're angry about James Corden being cast, he was Ryan Murphy's first choice. So you ask yourself, why was he Ryan Murphy's first choice? What does that say about Ryan Murphy with that? Yes, he has given a lot of opportunities to gay actors, but this is another chance, and he gave it to James Corden. I thought James Corden did a lovely job. The conversation is a lot trickier and has many more layers than people want to discuss. People kind of just sort of want to say their tweet and move along. They want to be quoted on BuzzFeed or whatever and become meme or whatever. I had a lot of people text me about this when the movie premiered last night, and I've continued to see stuff on the internet since then. And I've responded to everyone, and I'm like, do you want to actually have this conversation, or do you just kind of want to say your two sentences and move on? Because if you want to say your two sentences, that's fine. But the conversation's longer than a lot of people want to have. And I know we had it already this afternoon, Mother, but buckle in. Buckle up. What was it that Betty Davis said? Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night.
Bumpy ride, yeah.
Bumpy night.
Bumpy night, oh, okay.
Bumpy night, bumpy ride.
Yeah, night, probably.
Listen, you have that bumpy ride during a bumpy night. Betty Davis, iconic. So, let's go. I swear this isn't going to go on for as long as you think it is, but let me start with the phrase. Let's look at the history of gay characters in media and actors playing them. So there are gay characters on stage, going back to Danny Kaye and Lady in the Dark, but it was always implication. I would argue the first works, commercially speaking anyway, to have like openly gay characters started in the late 60s with Hair and The Boys in the Band, and then progressed into the 70s with A Chorus Line, and then into the 80s with Lacage, and going into the 90s with Rent and more movies and whatnot. We don't really see any movies with gay characters. Again, none that are very prominent. A, the character isn't prominent, and the movie didn't have a prominent stance in society until really like probably the late 70s. And, you know, we're looking at things like Al Pacino in Cruising, where he's looking for a killer in an gay S&M bar. So, you know, how's that for representation? Or, you know, you have the sassy Bloomingdale's associate who's hitting on Richard Gere and making him uncomfortable, and, oh, isn't that funny? Or the guy who's so... One of my favorite, and when I say favorite, I mean least favorite, visual gags in movies in the 90s were when a character seems so straight and so, you know, tightened up, and then they would, like, show one little flourish that made you go, oh, they're gay, and they would like give you a little wink of like, mm-hmm, now we know. So it'd be like, you know, something on their shoes, or they had like a ring on the wrong finger, like there was an earring, and it was like, mm-hmm, now we know. That shit always kind of bugged me, because that's actually making a joke with the fact that someone is gay. And it's not a joke. I mean, the way some people live their lives is a joke, but so that's sort of where we're at. And then we go into the 90s, and up until that point, also playing gay was considered sort of career suicide. You know, you don't play gay unless you want to only play gay for the rest of your life. So a lot of actors never did it. That all kind of really changed in the early 90s, especially with Tom Hanks in Philadelphia, where he won the Oscar. And then the narrative switched to, oh, that's Oscar bait. You're playing a gay character. Gay characters are dying of AIDS and Angels in America and Love, Valor, Compassion in Philadelphia. And so how wonderful you get to play a role so different from you, because you're as straight as it comes. If you're playing gay and you are dying of AIDS, isn't that brave of you? Oscar, here you go. And then the narrative has switched, because now we're starting to see more openly gay actors find prominence in the industry. And there are way more gay storylines than there were. Still not enough, but we're getting there. And once again, the community has more things to complain about. This story doesn't represent my journey. That I don't know anyone like that. That's a stereotype. This straight actor is playing this role. To which I say, yes. Also, you know, I've said it before, the answer to having a queer story represent you is having just more queer stories, right? Movies have been around since the 1910s, 1920s, and think about all the storylines that straight people have gotten in that time. Like, you don't see any straight man going, well, that doesn't represent me, because they've had 90 years of movies to go off of that have represented them. When it comes to prominent mainstream movies, we really didn't start seeing them until the late 80s for the gay community, or the queer community, and not like more readily until like the last 10 years. Like, we are past Cuba Gooding Jr. in Boat Trip. We are past Adam Sandler and I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry. Like, we've moved on past that. That's huge. That is huge. We must remember that. We must remember where we came from. So I understand the, what's the word I'm looking for? I understand people's frustration, their indignation.
Good.
That's a word that I can apply to this?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, why not?
I told you, I'm bad at words sometimes. I understand people's indignation. Do I think it should all be directed towards James Corden? Not necessarily. I think that's rather low-hanging fruit, so to speak. You know, it's an easy shot to take, and people can really find grist for the mill. I will also say, I'm not going to make a tangent out of this, but it's just something I've been seeing, and I need white gays to shut it down now. Do not say a straight actor playing a gay role is equivalent to blackface, or, you know, a white actor portraying a different ethnicity. It could not be more different. And saying as such is showing your ignorance. I don't have the time to explain why it's not the same thing as blackface. First of all, I am not the authority on the history of that. And I'm not the person who, it's not my place to talk about it. I will just say, research it, look it up, educate yourself. Not you, mama, but, you know, the world. Yes, just stop saying that, people. It's not the same thing.
Does every story have to apply to every person?
I mean, I think The Wizard of Oz applies to everybody. But no, I know exactly what you mean. No, it doesn't. That's the beauty of storytelling. It's multitude of perspectives and journeys to go through.
I mean,
there's
certain identification, but there's also growth that happens too. You get exposed to a different way of thinking or doing or acting or relating or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if you want to tell me that every single gay man is like every other single gay man, then it's not possible, right? So you can't have one story that represents all people.
Right. You can't have a story that represents all people, which is why I say have more stories. There's also nothing wrong with watching a journey that isn't your own. As you said, you learn from that. I don't think, particularly in general, it's necessary to just have gay men play gay roles. A, I think that's limiting in general. And there are so many occurrences where actors learn something from playing somebody so different from them. A famous instance with The Prom, exactly, on stage, Caitlin Kinnan, and I know, identified as straight when she played, before she played Emma on Broadway. And then during her journey of playing the role, came to realize that she's actually bisexual. And would she have come to that conclusion without The Prom? Maybe. She definitely wouldn't have come to that conclusion at the time. So that's a beautiful thing to happen. And that can happen. And I'm not saying people will then eventually realize they're bi, but they can learn empathy and compassion. They can learn something about themselves. Also, sexuality is fluid. Dip your toes into them waters. You learn something new about yourself with every new experience that you have. And that's something to be said. That also said, the imbalance is such right now that gay actors are finding it hard to find work in general because they're told you're too gay, you're too this, we have to close this off. Even in this time where it's way more accepting, it's still not 100%. So I understand that if gay actors are being denied a multitude of straight roles, give them the gay roles in the meantime, correct this imbalance until there's more of a shift. This is sort of what it needs to be right now. I respect that and I understand that. When it comes to James Corden in The Prom, this is also another jabbing. A lot of words I saw were mincing, prancing, stereotypical, because in the first couple of minutes, he was more effeminate. Barry is an effeminate role. Brooks Ashmanskas played it as such on Broadway. I will say, similar to Pryor Walter in Angels in America, who is also a very effeminate gay character, I don't think a gay person has to play Pryor. I don't think a gay person has to play Barry. You can usually tell when a straight person plays him, even if they're good. There's something about the way it happens where you can tell it's not lived in their skin. You can tell when a straight person's playing Pryor because you know, you can tell that those battle scars aren't real. They are put upon, they are theatrical. Again, nothing wrong with it, but it does shift a bit the tone of the character.
Did you sense that with James Corden?
Yeah, I can tell that it wasn't real, which it doesn't have to be necessarily, but you know, certain inflections that I didn't mind with Brooks because I could sense the fact that it was something that he could do and probably had done in the past. Something felt put upon with James Corden and made it, I don't say it made me offended. I was more offended by Andrew Garfield in Angels in America, and that dude won a Tony Award for it and has critical praise up the wazoo. And I remember sitting there going, why? You know, he talked like this the entire time. Lewis, you get Trooper of the Year. I said it before, but I'll say it again. I thought, okay, Marlena Dietrich. I don't think James Corden was nearly as bad as that. However, using words like prancing and mincing brings up another issue in the gay community, which is a sense of misogyny. Yes?
Yeah.
Misogyny in the world, misogyny in the gay community. There's nothing wrong with being effeminate and portraying a character as such. I understand the queer community having issues with it because that is how it's been presented. That's how gay men have been presented in mainstream media for a very long time. And only until recently have we started to see sort of other tones to that. That said, outside of movies and theater, there's still a great deal of shame in the queer community for effeminate men. For men who are, we're going to get graphic here, mama. There's a term called bottom shaming, where the queer community makes jokes about men who are bottoms when they have sex, because there's something degrading about taking on a feminine role.
Someone's got to be the bottom.
Well, some people don't enjoy penetrative sex, so they like sensuality. But in terms of that kind of sex, yeah, someone's got to be. And might as well be someone who enjoys it, right? It's sex. You're supposed to enjoy it. Do the thing that you like. And with femininity, there's nothing wrong with it. I have my pants off right now, and I'm crossing my legs in front of you. And I say, and what? Listen, many a Thanksgiving has passed where family members have joked about my childhood love of Pretty Pretty Princess, of wearing ruby slippers while watching Wizard of Oz, of wearing my sister's, what I called her temple shoes, when watching Singin' in the Rain to make the tapping sounds. And I say, and what?
This is my sort of bigger view, which is that I don't like silos of any kind and being typecast into a silo of any kind. And whether that's, you know, all different kinds of women, you know, there's the double bind with women that if they're too feminine, they're particularly in politics, you know, they're pushover or they're, or in business, they're emotional, and that's like negative, negative. If they know their mind and they're very forward and whatever, they're bitches. So there's lots of ways to define all of these things. And the problem is when we try to make that lane too narrow for everybody.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, when you have people saying, well, you know, I don't see my journey there, or James Corden shouldn't be doing it because it needs to be, you know, I don't want to make this bigger than it is, but I've always had trouble with this thing called a quota. And I understand why there are quotas, but they can backfire sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it's not 100-0 on issues like that. So I think we're all learning also.
Yeah.
And so to come down so ironclad on certain things is not understanding that this is all part of the human experience.
Mm-hmm.
Am I getting too like weird?
No, I think you're okay. I think you're just weird enough. You could get a little weirder for my taste.
I wish I could tell that sad kid I was to stop crying into his Cheetos. They say it gets better, guess what it does.
I interviewed Donald Weber Jr. once for Baking on Broadway, and we talked about this. I don't know if we included it in the episode, but he said when you cast a black Sid Sorkin, the main character in Pajama Game, he said, you ask yourself, how does that change the narrative of the story without even changing a word, making him black and the other men in the factory white in the 1950s? What does that do? It adds a sense of danger. There's a tension there because he's the outsider. And that's something that a creative team has to think about. What's the story they're trying to tell? And you cast the actors that are best for the role, yes. But you also ask yourself, is there something that this actor can bring with the journey they've come through life as either a black actor or actress, Asian, female, male, trans, older, younger, larger, thinner? And how does that change things? That might be exciting to try new things. One of my favorite things is Nicholas Heitner, when he was casting Carousel in London before it came to Broadway, wanted to cast a black Mr. Snow, and the Rodgers and Hammerstein estate originally said no, and he's challenged them and he said, expand your goddamn horizons. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, multiracial casting is such a norm now with revivals, we don't even think about it, but it was so bold at the time because his mind wasn't going, oh, I need one of this. He was like, I want to bring new blood to this story, and I want to bring actors who haven't had the chance to do this before. It's going to bring a new energy to it. That's the right way to think about it.
And then on the other side, to bring it back to the prom.
Oh, is that what we're talking about?
I felt like there was something a little token about Kerry Washington in that role.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of stretches the imagination that a community that is so bigoted toward gays, gay people, would also accept this hoity-toity black woman who's head of the PTA. It's incongruous.
Yeah.
That they'd be that sort of open-minded, because in small town middle America, it's a little different.
Truly anywhere. I would say middle America is a little more transparent about its racism than in other places. Yeah. So in the stage show, her character was white. Alyssa was still black, as was the principal, although I do know in Atlanta when the show tried out, it was an all-white cast. At least the principals were. I think that's something that could have been brought to it by casting Kerry Washington, was that mentality of, okay, well, is it possible that as a black woman in this community, she has to kind of be a little more forceful in order to not have anything stick to her as a black woman? You know, it's that idea of, you know, make them cry before they make you cry, that kind of thing. But I didn't see any of that. I didn't see any inner turmoil with her. But I also didn't really see any with Ariana DeBose as Alyssa as well.
Right.
And again, I bring that to Ryan Murphy, because I saw Ariana DeBose in Summer, the Donna Summer musical, where she was absolutely fantastic. Girl's a star. And Alyssa's a difficult role because she has a lot of pressure as a popular student, as a straight A student, mom's on the PTA, and she is gay and she wants to be open, but she doesn't know how, and she has all this anxiety. And the girl on Broadway, Isabel Michaela, I think I'm saying her name correctly. I don't know. I apologize if I fucked it up. She showed a lot of that conflict and that anxiety in there, and you felt for her more, and it brought a better balance to the relationship with Emma. It felt more like a relationship, whereas in the movie, kind of felt a little sexless, a little joyless, and it felt like Emma was sort of making all the strides to the point where we're like, why are you even bothering? Your girlfriend is sort of just sitting there going, okay. And again, I want to say, I know that's not Ariana. I don't know her at all, but from what I know about her from friends who worked with her, she's a firecracker. She's opinionated. She's forceful. Seeing her on stage, she's a firecracker. She'll bring it to the runway. Bring it to the runway. So it's Ryan Murphy really that made that. And you ask yourself, why? What's the narrative he's trying to tell with this? That, you know, the people who are against Emma's story are cold and calculated, and the people who let it happen are just passive. Like, no, there's inner turmoil. These are still human beings. It's hard to remember that sometimes because internet.
I think maybe she was just directed, as you said, always comes back to that, as very repressed. And it's the way she was dressed all the time was very conservative, mm-hmm. and almost like schoolgirl in a way, even though she was in high school.
It was also a very chic town, considering the fact that all they have is an Applebee's.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, like the part, I remember they go to the motel, the four actors go to that motel or whatever, and the joke is like, oh, they're fleas, this place is a dump. And I'm sitting there going, that's a nice hotel or motel, whatever you want to call it, a nice inn. We were talking about James Corden, the gay performance and the controversy of it all. So I say, in terms of job opportunities, let's correct the imbalance. And then once we do, let's allow people the chance to experience some time in our shoes in hopes that they might understand us, right?
I think that's very profound, very poignant.
I found the prose.
Yes, and really applicable to so many things that are hot issues right now.
Yeah, and also keep in mind, this is my opinion. This is how I see it. I'm sure there are people who are going to listen to this and be super upset and go, you don't understand. To which I say, great, write me a 5-star review on iTunes and explain to me why I'm wrong. As long as it's a 5-star review, I need that algorithm.
But the point is, let's have a conversation.
Yeah.
Let's just talk.
That's sort of what the internet has killed. The internet has killed a conversation, you know?
Well, I've had it happen on LinkedIn where I posted a point of view on something and some dude starts just reaming me on there. And I was so angry and I was, I wanted to write something back. And in the end, I just said, you know what? I can do better than this. And I wrote to him and I said, look, you know, I hear what you're saying, but why don't we have a conversation about this offline? I'm happy to hear you out.
He never responded after that. No, because he just wanted to get out his toxicity.
Right.
I love that a man tried to do that to you. Nicole Byer does this really lovely thing that I like where people will, because she's a heavier Black woman in comedy. And so people will go online and say things that are like, you're fat, you're ugly, you're not funny. And she'll respond and go, well, I hope that made you feel better today. And a lot of people will be like, you know what? It did. I was having a really bad day and I took it out on you. I'm sorry. I still don't think you're funny, but I'm sorry I said, I'm sorry that I trolled you. Sometimes people just need to get shit out. And to be fair, this has been a shitty year. We are still kind of reeling from the trauma of 2016. And a lot of good has come from that trauma, the Me Too movement, the resurgence of Black Lives Matter twice actually in the last 4 years, a lot of things, a lot of action, but we also have to remember, you have to remember where your anger is going, because at the end of the day, it's still going to people. It's still being aimed at human beings who are just trying to help the world spin forward. Let me put it this way. James Corden is not the enemy. He is an ally who tried. And if you thought he misstepped, inform him as such and try to help educate him so he can help in the future. Don't try to turn him into the enemy. You know,
I agree.
We can't win the fight by prioritizing who we fight with. Someone wants to join the fight, you say welcome. And that's all I have to say on that. So, prom, how many stars out of 10 for you?
Out of 10?
Yeah.
But they're different scales, like enjoyability, quality, you know.
Is on a scale of 1 to 10, how much did you enjoy watching it?
9.
9. Cool. For you, it's like a 7.
For you, that's good. You're very critical.
Yeah, well, especially with movie musicals and queer storylines. I will say movie musicals have had this wonderful resurgence. The problem is that we don't have many directors who know how to make them. So there's usually something I'd like in every movie musical. Jingle Jangle, though, was my favorite one this year. At the end of the day, the prom is Jingle Jangle Erasure, what it is. No, I would say 7 out of 10. Worth it for Meryl. I think I think the cast is strong, and I like the show so much. I think the movie has proven that the show is good.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So, Mom, we've come to the end. We're concluding. Mm-hmm. Where can people find you on the social medias?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not so with it as many, but I am certainly on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I am.
Do you want people to find you on Facebook?
They can if they want, or they can email me. I still do email. You guys don't do email. You can text me.
Don't text my mom.
Don't text.
You can check her out on Facebook, though. She's really pretty. You should see some of the photos she has on Facebook.
Ah, it's so sweet.
Don't see her right now, though. She's not done up right now.
And for anybody who does LinkedIn, I sort of have developed a voice there, so you can see me at LinkedIn and Twitter. It's at Danny Ticton Koplik.
Yes, my mom has a Twitter. I do not. You can find me on Instagram at Matt Koplik, usual spelling. Make sure to give us a nice little rating, 5 stars with a review if you can. Again, if you disagree with me on the prom or anything that we discussed today, write so in the review section. Just make sure it comes with 5 stars. Mama, we close out with a little diva Broadway usually. Do you want to stick with your original choice from last time? Do you remember who you
did? Yeah, Liza.
Liza?
Yeah.
Great. All right. Well, guys, make sure to check out The Prom on Netflix. Come to your own conclusions about it. If you liked it, that's amazing. If you needed it in this time, that's also amazing. I hope that it brings you all the things you need from it. In the meantime, this has been Broadway Breakdown. You will see me next week. And here's Miss Liza. Say bye, Ma.
Bye, but wait.
What?
I'm a stage mother. I just want to say stay tuned for that screed on Evita.
Oh,
hang on.
Yes, the YouTube Evita. The script is in development now. All right, yes. Stay tuned for 2021 for that YouTube channel, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Have you ever wondered how your favorite performer actually feels? Well, here's your chance. Welcome to The Quiet Part Out Loud with me, Bobby Steggert, Broadway actor, and now a therapist to a whole host of Broadway creatives. Part interview, part therapy, this is not your typical podcast. We'll go right to the heart of things with some of your favorite artists, what they still struggle with, what lessons they've learned, what they haven't figured out yet. There's enormous power in saying the quiet part out loud. Are you listening?
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.